Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone. I'm Dale K, darn it. From Spook Show, of course, and also of late, Eerie House. And it's Eerie House Radio Time. And my topic today, something I've been thinking about lately, with the holidays coming up. Kind of weird, so I start thinking about those iconic monsters. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the universal classics like Frankenstein, Dracula, werewolf, mummy, or even the creature from the Black Lagoon, who sort of fits the genre I want to discuss today. But he's just a little too well known. These are the iconic monsters that maybe when you were little you had no idea what movie it was from until you started buying monster magazines, as you should. The creatures that are indelibly burned on a science fiction or horror fan's psyche and the imagery in your head. And to give you a classic example, let's just start with one of the most iconic creatures from the 1950s. And those were the aliens in The Invasion of the Saucer Men, those cool, bulbous, veined head critters who come to try to take over the Earth. And, of course, an inspiration, I think, for the Mars Attacks, which comes later. Frank Gorshin stars in the film as Joe. And poor Joe comes to a bad end, but we don't want to give too many spoilers if you haven't seen Invasion of the Saucer Men. Now, that film was later remade by Larry Buchanan as the Eye Creatures. It's basically the same story, just a slightly different monster. They kind of look like the Michelin Man. If you've ever seen that one. So I highly recommend both films. Eye Creatures are nowhere near as iconic as Invasion of the Saucer Men. It was a film that really wasn't on television very much that I recall, at least here in Cleveland in the 60s and 70s. I didn't see it until the early 70s, I think, once on old Channel 43 here in Cleveland, one of those UHF stations, if you recall those days. Another really good film that I recall from the era was The Mole People. Now, this was these are interesting-looking guys. Again, rubber mask-type creatures, but I remember seeing lots of photos of them around, and the movie starred John Agar, Hugh Beaumont from Leave It to Beaver. Yeah, Mr. Cleaver was in The Mole People, as was Nestor Pava, one of my favorite character actors from the era. He was also in Creature from the Black Lagoon and Revenge of the Creature and a few other films. Nestor Pava in The Mole People. Folks, if you want to jump in and join in the conversation, dial very carefully, please, to the number 646-378-0264. And by gosh, I think someone's joined us here in Erie House. Hello, caller.
What a blast! It is I, Gar the Ghoul.
Hey, you're not even a caller. You're like a fixture around here lately. Thanks, Gar, for calling in.
You need to dust more.
Yes. Believe me, I do need to dust more. I'm in the process of helping my son move into his little portion of bought his own eerie house.
His own eerie house.
The dust.
Each word is separate,
but
yes.
Yeah,
so the iconic monsters. One of the things is someone had to come up with these creatures, these beings, these things, and not only it was something that made us as viewers do that knee jerk reaction of whoa, hey, that's unusual, that's different. So it had to be unlike us, and then unlike nature. To really freak us out. And, I mean, if you look at the mole people, it's like a lizard and a mole combined, if you ever seen a mole. They do have those big, huge hands, but they don't have scales.
I knew a girl who had a mole on her chin. Moly. Sorry. Had an Austin Powers.
Did it have hands like that?
Well, no. Yeah, she did, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. And you let her get away. But, really? Okay.
No. No, but, yeah. Oh. And that was like a low-budget film, but didn't that come out of Universal Studios, I think, old people?
I don't see where it came from. But I do know that it
came
starred,
from the 50s.
I do know it had what's that guy's name? He was Alfred the Butler in Batman. Why does everything go back to Batman? The guy who was the high priestess was Alfred Napier? No. Jack Napier?
Yes.
No, what was that guy's name? That's crazy. I can't think of the guy's name. He was a high priest who sat there, and he was kind of running the place. And then the whole mole people thing was more about the subjugation of an entire species to another. It was very – there were a lot of things
Alan
going
Napier.
On. With Alan Napier. There we go. Yeah.
There you go.
Jack Napier was like the Joker, but that was something else. Anyway, yeah, the mole people had all kinds of stuff going on with it. Crazy. And what was the thing
that
– that
great introduction, too. Remember the guy talking about – how the world will, there's worlds within worlds, and people have theories that, you know, the universe is the opposite of what we think. We're on the outside looking in.
There's something amazing about a narrator stepping up and going, "Hello, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bend your ear for a moment before you watch our picture." That's just crazy.
Yes.
That's just, you know, it's like, so what you have there is you have an authority figure talking to you, and then here's our show.
Yeah, and now our ridiculous movie. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. And it doesn't matter who, because there was that other one. What was that other one? The guy was smoking a pipe and he was talking. Was that the dogs that were dressed up like big rats or something? I can't remember what it was.
Oh no, you're not thinking of Killer Shrews.
Yeah, the Killer Shrews. There was a guy who introduced the Killer Shrews, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, see, there you go.
Yeah.
I have to describe these things so you can fill in the right words, and then we go, yeah, now we're talking about the same thing.
The dogs with rugs.
But
Another iconic monster I remember, again, seeing the picture and becoming familiar with it but not knowing where it was from, was the Metamula Mutant from this island Earth.
Oh,
I thought
that
was
a crazy thing. He had crab pinchers for hands, and he had a big two-lobe head, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
Again, not like us and against nature. It's just like, what can we do to really catch the awe of the viewer? I do that a lot. I use that word. And you always go, aw. But, yeah, awe is an amazing thing. Awe. Yeah, that mutant was just like, wow. But the mutant was great, but also the alien people in the beginning before you even met the mutant guy. And did you notice they didn't call him a mutant? He said he was a mutant. Or something like that.
A mutant,
that.
Yeah.
Mutant.
What is a mutant?
Yeah, and it was like, what? What are you talking about? Is that a mutant? What? Anywho.
It's like detente. I don't know.
Detente and detente. Anywho. The more that these people could come up with these unusual things, 20 million miles to Earth, crazy. Now, of course, that was more animated than anything else.
No, but still a very iconic creature. People associate that with the period of our, my favorite kind of films. The fodder of the 50s and the 60s is the stuff I grew up with on television.
Exactly. The Hideous Sun Demon, another one. More lizard man type thing. Weird. And how did he come to be? It was like... I think he got nailed with a a gamma bomb. He didn't turn into the Incredible Hulk. He turned into a lizard guy. That freaked me out. That was the one.
A similar storyline, though. That's funny that you mentioned that, because it did have the same. And so did, I think, another iconic monster was the Amazing Colossal Man. It was very much like the story of the Hulk.
Yeah, except it burned half his face off or something, which was
I think he became mutated later for the Amazing War of the Colossal Beast, the sequel, as I got all messed up. And they used that creature again in another film called The Cyclops. You remember that one with Lon Chaney Jr.?
The Cyclops? Yeah.
Again, it was the giant guy with the messed up eyeball. It was very similar to Amazing Colossal Man.
And they regurgitated it for Lost in Space. Remember,
they did.
A big, huge, titanic Cyclops in that one.
Yeah.
And
there's some
they,
iconic television, too, I think. Television monsters, a lot of them, I think, sprang from Star Trek and The Outer Limits.
Outer Limits? And I can't remember the Outer Limits of the Twilight Zone, where they got the guy who's a soda jerk, and then at the end of the show, he tips his hat up and he's got a third eye. It's like, hello.
That was very good Twilight Zone. It was also kind of one of those twist endings that was really great, that the guy in the diner was one of the aliens, and it was another alien looking for him with the three or four arms or whatever, with John Hurt.
It was crazy.
Do you recall?
I can't remember if it was Twilight Zone or Outer Limits. There was also another one where this guy gained incredible strength or something like that. But the monster alien in that was a two-headed robot-looking guy with like human heads or something. And
Mr. Dingle.
They were having
a
dialogue between
each other. Is that the one with Burgess Meredith?
It might have been Burgess Meredith. But it
I
was
think
something
so, and
about,
that would be the Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I have all these things in my head, but I don't have the title page is missing, so I can describe
that's
it.
That's okay. Hey, we help each other out, right?
There you go. Somehow it works. Just so many weird, unusual monsters throughout all of them. And as you said, if you take away the Universal classics, there are still so many that they came up with.
Oh, yeah. Hey, David Binkley is in the chat from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. And he named the two episodes you were mentioning.
Okay.
Yeah, he named the two episodes you were mentioning. One was Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up?
There we go.
That was the one with the guy with the third eye when he took off his hat.
Right.
And then Mr. Dingle the Strong. That was the one with Burgess Meredith. Do you remember from The Outer Limits, another iconic, real creepy monster face thing was the Zanti Misfits? Remember the ants with the face on them?
Oh, yeah, and they came out of a little spaceship there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was weird. There was also one with Agnes Moorehead and little robot monsters, little teeny robot monsters. I don't know.
That was fun. That was
so...
That's back to Twilight Zone.
Yeah, there we go. So we're bouncing between these two. I've seen so much stuff. these are just, and they give you the willies, these little things. You know, if you look down and you see not necessarily Universal, I could be wrong. The fly. You take a fly and you put a human head on it, or you take a human and you put a fly head on it, and you're scared. That's some crazy stuff. Iconic,
I have a confession. I have a confession to make. There's a movie I have not seen in its entirety yet that has a very iconic monster. I've seen pictures of him for years. And there's a wonderful picture of him floating by, if you're watching on the internet right now, of the monster of Piedras Blancas.
That is a weird-looking monster.
Yeah.
I as well. I have not seen the film, but I've seen that monster. I'm like, they put some work into that monster. They really did.
Yeah. It's a full body suit, much like the creature from the Black Lagoon, and a pretty good one, it appears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the from the classic photos that you see.
Oh. Was it the United States Navy versus the monster, and there was a really crazy swamp monster or something? Oh, what was that called? The Navy versus the something. The Navy.
Yeah, the Navy versus the night monsters.
Okay, there we go. And
we kind of brought that one up last week too. That was a weird one.
Yeah, yeah, they looked crazy funny, weird, crazy.
Yep.
And they would look. In fact, many of the movie posters and everything, they would look better in a comic book than trying to reimagine and try to recreate it into the screen. But they did it. They just weren't very functional. I don't. Wait. Oh, that's the one, isn't it? What's her name? I can't think of her name. Mamie Van Doorn. Yeah, she brought, you know, there were three stars in one. You know, the Navy versus the Night Monster. That was a crazy film.
There you go.
And
it seems like these iconic monsters are the ones that drew us to. You couldn't wait to get to your TV. You would block out time because back in those days, you know, you couldn't DVR stuff. You didn't have video tape, let alone discs.
Right.
And you had to wait for stuff to come on TV. And it was very exciting when you'd see a picture from one of these movies, either in a magazine or in a commercial for the upcoming, you know, movie. I remember both Teenage Werewolf and Teenage Frankenstein Monster. Both of those are very iconic, to me at least, and again, captures that era. Very good makeup in those.
The makeup, I mean, it definitely got the monster across. What other ones were there?
Plus, you get to hang out with Whit Thistle.
Space Pirate said, the death... A Voyage at the Bottom of the Sea was another sea monster every week. Oh, really? They did? I didn't realize that they had a Monster of the Week with...
They very often had either human-sized monsters that were inside the sea view or giant monsters sometimes right out in the sea that were threatening the entire ship. That was a fun show. They had a lot of that on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, as I recall.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Space Pirate also brought up another classic. An iconic monster is The Thing, with James Arness from 1954, I think.
Yeah. Again, nature gone amok. A vegetable that apparently piloted a spaceship, which is just, all right, go team. And then, you know, curiously, in the 1970s, 80s, and forward, I guess, there have actually been studies that said that there is some type of way to document changes in the electrical output of plants if stuff is going on. It was like a psychology type of experiment where they took a plant and they said, "Hi, plant, how are you?" And they had it really close in proximity to someone cooking a live lobster, and the plant went, "Oh my goodness, great, crazy! What are you doing?" And electrical output, all of a sudden it had crazy electrical output, and then they plucked a leaf off said plant and put it in the water, and it went crazy again. So hey, who knows?
Oh wow,
we've been offending plants for years.
Everyone that's in the chat room. I want to say hi, of course, to David Binkley and Space Pirate, who've been here since the very, very beginning of the show. And also, Evil Annie Repper joins us. CW, thank you so much, who brought up Lost in Space, who had a monster each and every week. Many of them very iconic. Like you mentioned, the Cyclops, there were also all kinds of various creatures in that show. Have Guest 549, whoever that is. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we're getting quite a crowd in here. Monster every week was, and this wasn't necessarily, it was more like science fiction, was the Ultraman.
Yeah.
Ultraman, monster everywhere, and those, yes, Kolchak the Night Stalker, which was the best of the best, in my opinion, in 1970, mm-hmm. what, 5, 6, whenever that popped out. Amazing,
yeah.
Just blow my mind. And it lasted less than one season, and they killed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, whoa.
It's too bad, as it sprang from the two made-for-TV movies. That was fun, though, that they had monsters and creatures every week on Kolchak.
And my argument with them canceling it was it could have gone on forever.
Yeah. They were fun characters, too. Vincenzo, his boss. And
Kolchak himself, even though he was a bumbling, tripping over, you know, just... I went ahead and got the, I think Universal put out the DVD set of the whole season that they had. And they didn't really do a good job on it, which was kind of sad. It's too dark. It wasn't really, they could have digitized it.
I don't think there's that good of copies. Netflix, it was either Netflix or Amazon Prime had it on pretty recently, like within the last year. And I took the opportunity to watch a number of the episodes. Another fella I used to speak with a great deal was a fan of the show, and we discussed it at length. It's Kolchak was a lot of fun, and
it was
too bad he went on to be a Christmas guy.
Yeah, well, 'tis the season. There you go. And that one film propelled him forever, I guess, in Christmas stuff. But the Kolchak thing, when it came out. And I watched it as a teen. That was amazing TV. That was, mm-hmm. I mean, we already had the syndication of Twilight Zone and Outer Limits and there's some other ones, and I can't remember them right now. But there were a whole bunch of black and white science fiction related fare,
yeah.
As well as Star Trek was in syndication. Lost in Space was in syndication. The Invaders was in syndication. All those. But then we had Kolchak and coming out, and it was new, and it was like, whoa. And I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was about the chemistry of this of that program, of the writers, of the everything. It was fantastic. There was one where he was fighting a witch, or he was fighting a ghost, or something. And whoa, they had wind machines blowing and everything, and I was like, it was great. It was amazing television, in my opinion.
It was, and it was always such a disappointment when they canceled them. I remember being, I was very young during the first run of Lost in Space. I was devastated, and it's funny how you look at it when you're older, and you go, yeah, that show really went downhill fast. Lost in Space, actually, the first season was relatively feasible science fiction. They weren't way, way out there. Yeah, they had their aliens and alien encounters,
right.
But I think when the Dr. Smith character started getting goofier and goofier, he was actually rather sinister at first. I think that was the demise of that show ultimately.
Exactly. It changed the direction. Unlike Star Trek. Star Trek, the original series, stayed the course the entire X number of years that it was in production. Lost in Space came out with a spy that had infiltrated their ship, and it never said what country they were from, but who knows. It was it was dire, and it was serious, and it was survival. And then all of a sudden it became Father Knows Best with wacky guy that's going to mess everything up.
Gilligan's Island in space.
It turned in, yeah, it just really, and, you know, it was constantly the women going, oh, Dr. Smith, and it's like, oh, really? Yeah, really? We're going to do that? Someone hasn't lasered his head off yet? What's going on? You know. Someone hasn't dropped old Smith out the airlock yet? Come on. You know.
I know.
Like, let's go save him. It's like, oh, no, let's not.
I know. They should have let him float off with the Green Lady, but
there's so many folks out there that actually liked the Dr. Smith character, That it's just crazy. I mean, yeah. Space Pirate says, but Judy was so hot. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, they all looked great in those space costumes of velour clothing.
Yeah,
I guess.
You know, there's another monster from the 50s that took me a long time to appreciate. You know what I mean? It's one of those I've seen once, and that was the She Creature. Remember that scaly monster? It even seemed to have frontal bumps to indicate it was a female monster, and it had a, I don't know, kind of a
just to make,
bug-like
head
or something.
Right. Yeah, they
it's like
they
a rocky type creature.
Little pictorial work there, but really, it's hard to tell.
She showed up later in Ghosts of Dragstrip Hollow. I've seen that for the first time recently, and it's like, oh wow, guest appearance.
Wow, yeah, that was like Robbie the Robot. He popped up everywhere.
Oh yeah, he's very iconic from the area. You gotta love Robbie. I don't know that you'd call him a monster, but certainly from the sci-fi horror fair, he first appeared, of course, in Forbidden Planet, a very classic science fiction film from the 50s.
Right,
he was everywhere, including Lost in Space.
Including Lost in Space. And he was on that one episode of Bonanza I was talking about. No. He was with Little Joe. They were in a cart. They were going to town. You didn't see that one?
I don't recall it.
Robbie the Robot. Yeah, he was driving a team of horses on the Bonanza.
No kidding. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Very kidding.
I did not know that.
Yes. That's my punchline for the day. Ow. You'd have to get a male and a female she creature and he creature together to see that there actually is a variation there. To me, it just, I don't know. I don't know how much pictorial work they did there, but, if I was getting attacked by a creature like that, I don't think I'm going to stop and go, wait, are you a girl?
Oh, my gosh. I just looked up on IMDb the filmography
right.
for Robbie the Robot. Are you ready for this?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Starting with Forbidden Planet, the next year he was in, I remember The Invisible Boy. That was a fun movie.
Okay.
He appeared in the Thin Man TV series in 1958 as well as the Gale Storm Show in a skit. Also in Goodyear Theater, he was a chess-playing robot. A movie called The Invasion of the Neptune Men, he was a toy, uncredited. He appeared on Hazel, an episode of Hazel.
Well, see? He could have been on Bonanza this whole time. If he was on Hazel.
He appeared on The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, and as CW mentions in the chat, two episodes of The Twilight Zone. CW mentions also that the Wild Wild West had some interesting creatures and monsters. Robot was Smiley, the Lurch's little helper.
Hmm. There was another one where they replaced his legs with movable tracking, where it was kind of like the B9 robot had. Sometimes it would walk, but a lot of times it was like a solid base that would move. And they took Robbie's
track.
They took Robbie's feet away, and I wonder if he was on the Bionic Woman or something, or Wonder Woman. He was on Wonder Woman.
B9?
No, Robbie the Robot.
Let's carry on through his credits. He appeared, of course, on Lost in Space three times. The Banana Splits Adventure Hour as Mildred.
Yes, yeah, I remember Mildred. Yes, I do.
Columbo, something called Arc 2, a TV series. He was Alfie.
Yeah, Arc 2 was a kids' show on Saturdays.
Yes,
Space Academy, another kids' show.
Wonder Woman
Saturdays.
as himself, Robbie the Robot. In 1979. Also in 78, something called Project UFO. He appeared as Chuck the Robot on Mork and Mindy.
Chuck the Robot. I am
Oh, that's
Chuck.
Right. He did have a cameo in Gremlins.
Okay. I don't remember either of those other two films. Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. That was one of those direct to DVD or direct to video or something. And that stack,
yeah.
I don't know. I got no idea what that is. Looney Tunes.
But yeah, Robbie's been around.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. The fact that he was on Hazel and not on Bonanza, I see that as a missed opportunity.
Yes.
Oh.
But didn't Bonanza take place a long time ago?
Didn't Hazel? Ow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ow.
I guess Space Pirate has to go, or maybe he's unaware that this show goes for an hour now. But he
yeah.
says, thanks, guys, great show. Thank you, Space
thanks.
Pirate.
Glad you're enjoying our ramblings. Yeah,
right.
And another one, the B9 robot. I don't know if they'll actually have that on there. But I know for a fact that he was repurposed several times and used a few different places. Let's see. B9 robot. It just doesn't, nope, they don't recognize him as the B9 robot. Maybe it's a lost in space robot. I don't know if you
yeah,
have to be that cryptic
folks,
about
if you,
it.
Folks, if you want to join in the conversation, again, the number here is 646-378-0264 to Erie House Radio. Haven't heard from some of you for a while, so please feel free to join in. I mean, you could for me personally, I didn't really want to get into dinosaurs today, but very iconic monsters. They were used in so many films, but I do like the human-sized, humanoid-type creatures for the most part. I remember the mutant from Outer Limits. And what was it? The Purple Twilight, I think it was called. That had a very iconic monster from Outer Limits as well. So, yeah, TV had their share.
Yeah. Going into it, they had so many. Dark Shadows had all kinds of iconic figures. Not necessarily were they borrowed from, say, Universal, but they did have the vampire Barnabas. They had a witch. They had a phoenix, a fire creature. They did have kind of like a Frankenstein's monster in there. They had a talking head. Ow. They had a talking head. They had all kinds of, and werewolves. They had werewolves too. I forgot. They had werewolves. That one was a very unusual path and direction for early American soap operas in the 60s, 70s. I think they were on for 7 years. They might have been on longer, but that was another iconic monsters right there. All kinds. Man, the Purple Twilight monster, he's got like what? Either he's got a gill situation going on in his face, or he's got a lot of lips.
Yeah. I think he has a little of both.
I'm not, yeah, wow. Who was it? It was a very pretty girl. I think that was the Outer Limits, the one where they kept doing surgery to her and she looked beautiful, and then they took off their masks and they all had like duck lips. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it. I can't remember. Was it,
isn't that the one where the girl was in the bandages, the whole thing, and they, you're going to be horrible looking, and here she was kind of pretty, and then everybody else had the duck lips?
Yeah. I think it was the girl from the Munsters, Pat.
It wasn't Pat Engel.
No, that big round guy there.
I know.
Pat
Priestley.
Pat Priestley. Yeah, that was she was in the Outer Limits thing. And it was just weird because they all had like contorted lips and upturned or downturned noses or something. I think it was her.
Maybe it wasn't Pat Priestley. Maybe it was Donna Douglas. I think that's what David Binkley and CW are telling us.
Yeah. Who's that one? There's an Outer Limits of this guy with abnormally huge eyeballs.
Yeah, that was the mutant. That was the
that
one with Warren Oates. He was very young. Warren Oates was in it. You know,
oh, okay.
Sergeant Hulka from from Stripes.
Yeah, it takes so little to turn things into monsters so that they become something we can't forget. Again, anything that is dissimilar to what we are, you're a monster. And then anything against nature, like even taking something as simple as worms. Remember that one called Tremors where, like, earthworms got really big? There was actually a movie about worms where worms, like...
Yep. There was one called Worms, I believe.
Yeah, well, worms, spiders, bugs, snakes. There was one called... Remember that one? It was just S-S-S-S-S, like a snake. And it was this guy that was working with snakes, and he turned his kid into a snake. Really weird. That was a TV movie, I think.
I think so. Here, what CW brought up, made a comment, pig-faced people, which gave me a memory of something that was kind of haunting me for a while. In the early 70s, I purchased one of the copies of Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Okay.
There was a picture of a pig-faced man, and it looked so real. It was a very sharp and clear picture. It was like a full page.
Mm-hmm.
And it haunted me for a while because I was like, what is this from? And it turned out it's something that you don't see as well as this photo. It must have been like, you know, something taken for publicity or some other reason. But it was from the island of Dr. Moreau, the 1933 version
of Charles Lawton. Right. Oh, all kinds of different monsters in that. And,
yeah,
and the makeup
was made up as wolf kind of guy, or
just that was that. That's just a crazy film because there were so many different, again, mutants. This guy was working on all these different animals. There was a pig guy, and some of them were like lamb people,
monkey types,
and just all kinds.
We are not men.
There were some cat people. And there's several different renditions of it as well.
Yeah.
That make it even crazier. Because there's one with Marlon Brando. Yeah, Marlon Brando was in. But there was an earlier one than that had Bela Lugosi was in it, I thought. I could be wrong. I thought Bela Lugosi was one of the creatures.
In Moreau? Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Maybe that was the original release.
He's like the leader of the manimals, they call them.
Right, and they have the laws that they... We must say the laws. The laws are, and all that.
Yeah.
But
we are
they
not
did
men.
so much great makeup in that. Wow.
That was one that was... personally iconic to me. Now, one of the great icons of the probably born in the 50s, but I believe they came out in the 60s. There were these what we now call trading cards, but when we were young, we used to call them bubblegum cards because you got gum with them.
Because you got gum, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There were these collectible cards, and they're very collectible now, called Mars Attacks.
Right.
Okay. And there was a series of, I don't know, 50 or 60 cards. I can look it up for you real quick if you like. But for years, having been a collector of comic books and other things, I knew about these Mars Attacks cards, but they were priced way out of my range to try to put a set together.
Right.
But obviously it's stuck in Tim Burton's psyche as well, because he made the movie in 1996, which I think those aliens with the extended brain type heads and the bulging eyes, I think they're extremely iconic and really a representation of the early trading cards.
Oh, they are. They are. The artwork that they had going on with those trading cards for the Mars Attacks. The artwork, the artisans that were working on those, it's just incredible the amount of realism they put into those.
Yeah.
I myself was a bubblegum card collector as well. And I just loved the artwork that they would come out with. There were two different kinds of bubblegum cards. They were the photo cards that were kind of like your baseball cards where they had a picture of whoever on it, some baseball player.
Yeah.
And then they also had artwork cards where they had you could get Superman or Batman or you could get the Mars Attacks or you could get, you know, all kinds of different bubblegum character things. And there were people that were painting them. And years later, as our communication got better, we had the opportunity to actually go and find the original artwork of those cars and buy it for crazy amounts of money, if you ever did any of that. But you actually had the opportunity to meet the artisans that made this stuff. It's just totally crazy.
That's what's fun about conventions is you get to meet the artists and the creators and the actors and all the people that you see in these films that you enjoy. They did make a reprint of the original, Mars Attacks cards, and so I purchased the set. It was reasonably priced. At the time I bought it, it might have been $10-$20. I don't know.
Exactly.
Just to have them. To say I have them, Oh, cool. I wish they were the collectibles. I wish I would have. But they're really neat, and they tell a little story. I was not disappointed that Tim Burton made it a comedy. I think in the frame of reference of the viewers in 1996, I think that worked out real well. And, God, there were so many cameos of so many actors in that film.
Everyone. Yeah, it was like, wow.
And you had Jack Nicholson twice.
Jack Nicholson, three times. I thought he had three different characters he played, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, he was the cowboy, he was the president, and was he
a
third one?
And I thought he was a pimp or something, but I can't remember. I'd have to see it again. But, yeah, he was in there at least twice, but I thought maybe a third time, but, yeah. One of the great things about the opportunity of getting a little bit off track of this, it's still iconic, talking about your Mars Attacks collection of the set that you bought that was printed after the fact they weren't original. One of the things that's amazing is you have those in your mitt, you have them in your hand, and you can sit there and you can look at them and you can revel in how fantastic they are. And it doesn't really matter that they're not the original. It doesn't, unless you're like, well, it's not worth $50 instead of $5 or whatever.
Well,
but
there's a difference between a collector and a dealer.
Yeah.
When it comes to those kind of things.
I'm not a dealer. A dealer's going, that's not worth, the spit it was printed on.
I'm a little of both. I would rather have the original. I would rather, there's a few things I retain from my youth.
Right.
I would rather collect the things myself, but, sometimes you have to, like, when you're trying to put a set together, like, I remember collecting comic books and all. Believe me, it broke my heart to sell them. But
oh, yes, it did.
It seemed like sooner or later you had to go to a dealer to pick up that issue you were missing in between, or something.
Exactly. Yeah. If you look at some of the things you have to look at what's going on right now. We're at 2016, and the things that we marveled at were creations of the 1950s or the 1960s. One, good luck in finding one. Two, good luck in having a big enough wallet to actually purchase it. So I don't mind a recreation. I don't mind.
No, that's how I got my EC comics, too, was through reprints.
Because
you can enjoy the stories and read them and really get down with them and not worry about their collectability. You could just sit back with a box of cookies and and enjoy them,
Exactly. That's what it's all about. I ran across, this is so far away from iconic monsters, but I ran across a clown that apparently existed at the time when I was born, and I had it for, that thing bounced around with me for like 13, 14 years, and then poof, gone. And I don't know what happened. Anyway, I ran across it again, and I was able, and it was like, you know, it's 50 years old. And to run across it again, and it's in perfect condition, and it's, wow, there's so many things I don't remember about it that now it's like, wow, it's right there. Yeah, getting these things. Monster toys, like I've got monster toys around here as well. I've got some of the old 1980 Remco monsters. Those can get pretty expensive. They really can.
Yeah.
But they look really cool.
It's so funny, too, how that stuff, you know, these were common, and they were on every corner when you're a kid, but everybody played with them or destroyed them or used them as a bookmark or whatever it was they did, and very few kept them in nice condition, and I guess that's what drives the market when you do grow up and it was thrown away, it was lost, your mother cleaned your room and that was the end of that, or whatever the case may be. It's fun to go back, or like you did, and stumble on that thing, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, that was a big part of my life.
Oh yeah, yeah, because it really was. It was something that was it blew me away that I found it, ran across, and then in doing some investigation, I found out that particular model toy was used in an episode of Bewitched, and I found it, and I watched it. It was like, my clown is in Bewitched. Yeah, so. But what it also did is it dated. It helped me to date the toy because you find out, well, it was aired here, but it was actually filmed 6 months earlier, whatever. So you start back and go like, wow, this thing is really old. Kind of neat.
Those, I think, the fact that those things were very iconic to us is why we treasured them and or desired them when you were a kid or whatever, and you still haven't fully lost that desire as an adult. It's like, yeah, you know what? In a way, I'm kind of reliving that, maybe that little portion of your life that was cool, or that you associated with or assimilated to. You know, it's
for some reason,
I think that's what drives it. All these monsters that we've discussed, that you know, we all like these movies for some reason,
right?
And there's something about them that attaches to your memory, and I think it associates with just a good time in your life. Where, all right, everybody's leaving me alone, I can watch my monster movie.
Have you run across this? Because I don't consider these monsters. I really don't. Clowns. Mm. Some people are terrified of clowns. Now, the only time I know that clowns really went crazy was like in the 1980s or 90s Poltergeist film, whenever that was. Well, no, that was 1980.
Yeah, that was a toy clown.
Yeah, but other than that, why are people so crazy about being afraid of a clown? See, reason I don't get it is because I grew up with Bozo the Clown.
I think that phobia predates the horror films. Like I know there have been people afraid of clowns long before the movie It came out, long before
It. Yeah,
Poltergeist.
There we go. Yeah, right.
I don't recall any early films about killer clowns. Like you have, you know, you were inundated with them in the 80s and 90s, but I don't know. I shared this story not long ago. I had an aunt who had a statue of Emmett Kelly, and I don't know if you know who Emmett Kelly was.
I do. Yep, I'm there.
He was the sad tramp clown.
He was the bum clown, right.
He was an icon himself.
Yes.
And people had him in their living rooms, either in pictures or in... And this statue was kept in a dark room, okay? He's a hobo and unshaven, and I don't know, the way the shadows fell on him, I was deathly afraid of that clown as a very, very young fella.
Wow.
And, but I don't have like a phobia of clowns at all. In fact, I'm responsible for my son having a phobia of clowns because he walked in on me while instead of watching, oh, Daddy's watching porn, it's like, oh, Daddy's watching the Killer Clown movie, and he's like 4 or 2 or whatever. So,
oh, he saw the Killer Clowns?
He saw It.
Oh, he saw It. Oh, well, that would do it. Yeah.
Yeah, at a very young age, and to this day, he's not a real fan of clowns.
What about this? This is almost like an uniconic monster. Some people freak out about him. Ventriloquist dummies. Some people just don't like a ventriloquist dummy.
That's so funny because just today I was waiting for the movers to come for my son's stuff, and I thought I'd pop in some Netflix, and they still have some, you know, 4 of the 5 seasons of Twilight Zone on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched, they did a couple with the ventriloquist dummies. And
right.
These are iconic things, too. This was the one where Jackie Cooper was the ventriloquist, and the doll was actually conspiring with this little girl to get him in trouble and then
right.
escape or something like that. And CW mentioned a really, really good film that had a great ending, Anthony Hopkins in Magic.
Yeah, with Anne Margaret. Another one of those stars.
I thought at the end of the film when I hate to play spoiler, but this is so good to not share. Anthony Hopkins is dying with Spats, his ventriloquist doll. And Spats looks over at Anthony Hopkins and goes, "I hope you die first."
Oh.
Anthony Hopkins goes, "I think that's pretty likely."
Yeah. Ah, wow. And see, and then there's the other side of the coin is if this is indeed a supernatural film, and if some of these ventriloquist the presentations are supernatural in what they are, does the ventriloquist dummy, you know, when the guy's finally dead, goes, "I'm glad you finally got your hand out of me. I got to go somewhere," you know, or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to buy your driver's license there, buddy. And
take that
whatever.
Hand out of me.
Yeah, right.
Pervert.
I
think a lot of those films, including Magic, leave you with some doubt. Is this guy a schizophrenic or is that thing alive?
See,
I think Magic did that very, very well.
Right. And I've always kind of, I'll lean towards that that premise that hand puppets, ventriloquist puppets, even marionette puppets, those things all lead to schizophrenia. You should just leave them alone, people. It's just,
there was
really
a movie
indulge yourselves. Life is crazy enough. Don't make yourself crazier. You know.
There's another low-budget film from, I want to say around 60, somewhere between 60 and 64, called The Devil Doll, with it's a whole movie about that precept. I don't know what the deal is with that. Why are people creeped out by ventriloquist dummies? And I know the earlier ones, they were just kind of creepy looking. Even, what's his name, Jerry Mahoney's dummies, they were kind of creepy looking.
Oh, they were.
I was not real fond of Edgar Bergen either, to tell you the truth.
It looked like, for a time.
And Howdy Doody didn't look quite right to me either.
Yeah, and if you take all of those and you look at the sculpt of the faces that they did, for some reason, all the sculpts were the same. I mean, there are variations, different colors, this, that, and the other, but they were very similar in how they were sculpted. I think maybe they should have changed some of the things about them, but yeah, they did. They looked very similar. Oddly enough,
I just don't trust them. I don't trust them.
You don't trust them.
I don't. Oh my God, CW is trying to scare me over here now. She also mentioned another iconic
Talkie
Twilight
Tina?
Zone episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God.
With Kojak, Telly Savalas.
Yes. Yes.
Who loves you, baby?
He did not like Talkie Tina.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
He did not like her at all.
No, that was that.
Nor
was
she him.
So these. So now we've talked about clowns, ventriloquist dummies, dolls, and these, in a way, could be considered iconic monsters. If they made you go, ooh, then yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Now our monsters are like getting your prostate exam and things like those, real horrors, but
I don't want to meet that monster. Hi, I'm prostate exam monster.
Yeah.
When you're walking down the street and you hear the snapping of a glove, run! I don't know.
Run. How about the, do you remember the movie Phantom Planet? I thought that monster was semi-iconic. The
vampire lady.
Phantom Planet, where the guy shrunk down on the asteroid. There were these monsters that lived in the caves below or whatever.
Yeah. I know the film. I'm trying to find an image of the monsters.
It almost has like a duck bill type thing with glowing eyes.
It looks like it's got an acorn on top of its head.
Yes, that's the guy.
And it's wearing
acorn head.
Yeah, acorn head monster man. Another mutant, I guess. Probably. I don't know what that guy is. He definitely wasn't eating his Cheerios or something. He's got a deficiency of some type going on.
I don't know, but he was after that mute girl, who I thought was a very pretty lady. But
Most of these monsters have good taste in women.
Notice
that? They always go out, it's like that one right there.
They know which ones are the hotties. Look at how Creature from the Black Lagoon went after Jane Addams.
That's right. They have an eye for the ladies. That's it. Yeah. Wow.
They do. There was a whole website on that, and it got taken down. But there used to be this website, and it was an interesting concept. It was called Giants and Girls. And all it was a bunch of pictures from films of some kind of giant monster holding a girl in its arms, you know, or dragging off a girl.
Right.
I mean, from, it had everything from, the Brain That Wouldn't Die. There were lots of gorillas, you know, carrying off women. Creature from the Black Lagoon. Just everything you could imagine. But most of them were big, tall, huge creatures, you know.
Do you remember the 3D robot monster? There's one called the 3D robot monster, and it's a gorilla.
You mean the goldfish?
And he's got like a space
thing?
He's got a space helmet on.
Yeah.
And then you went through the whole film and you're like, this is insane, crazy, and then they pull a Wizard of Oz, it's all a bad dream.
Yeah.
It's all a bad dream. It's like, oh, really?
But that is one of those monsters you don't forget, is that stupid gorilla with the space helmet.
In fact, I would have liked that monster to go on with his own film somewhere else. Robot Ape Monster Takes Toledo, or is that something? In fact, were there ever any monster films where something ate Toledo?
Or Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Bye, Cleveland. Leave Cleveland alone. We have enough problems. We have a river that catches fire, for crying out loud.
You have a river that catches fire. My question is, and no one's selling tickets. What's the deal?
I don't know.
You should start.
We're not selling
tickets
football
now,
tickets.
Sir.
That's for sure.
Ow.
We're not selling football tickets. Mm. What are you going to do? Now, there's a horror story, the Cleveland Browns.
The Cleveland Browns.
We're about
Browns.
A minute to go. With
motion.
About 1 minute to go on the regular time. Sorry, Gar, I just want to spit this out.
Okay.
With a minute to go, I want to thank David Binkley, Evil Annie Ruppert, and Space Pirate for suffering through this show with us. On Iconic Monsters, and of course, Gar the Ghoul, thanks for calling in, dude.
My pleasure, dude.
Blah, blah,
to you all. And, ow, careful, Icarus. Always careful, Icarus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't get too close to the sun.
Well, you said the name of that team was the Toledo Browns? No, the Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland
Mudhens. Yeah. So the movie poster's the Cleveland Browns. Don't drink the water.
No.
No? That wasn't good enough?
Well,
see,
that
would be at the bottom of the post. Don't drink the water.
We'll see you next week here on Erie House Radio. Thank you and farewell.
Farewell.
We're in bonus time now. Hey, blah, we're in bonus time.
All right. How long does bonus time last?
It's supposed to be 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. They kind of surprise us sometimes and just croak it. But these are my favorite films from the 50s, the 60s.
There was The Blob, which is a weird, iconic monster. Because I don't even know what the deal is with The Blob. It doesn't talk. It doesn't write. It doesn't communicate. It just blobs. That's, you know.
Well, I think it dissolved people.
No, it did. Curiously, it left real estate alone, but it liked to eat people.
Yeah, and an acting icon is in that film, Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen. I don't know if it was
trying to
the
pass
only,
himself off as a teenager.
I don't know if it was the only horror movie he was in, but it's definitely one he's remembered for. Then there's all kinds of weird things. Mothra, frogs, them, spiders, tarantula, all kind, and they're just cosmic monsters, big spiders, and it's just nature gone awry that scares us. And of course, all the fly movies. You know, I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, that's kind of science gone awry there.
Science,
nature,
something going crazy. I don't remember this one. This one looks more like a drama. Lon Chaney in The Pillow of... Ow! The Pillow of Death. Have you heard of this one? Lon Chaney in The Pillow of Death.
A windowless fan?
I don't know, man. This is... Brenda Joyce and... who else is in there? That is insane. Rosalind Ivan.
I wonder if that's a PD movie.
It's a Universal film, 1945. Pillow of Death. Ow, it hurts to say it. Wow. Pillow of Death. Beware the pillow, it'll eat your head. I don't know. Ow.
I don't know. I don't know, but it was nice to see CW and Space Pirate come back and listen in today. We had a nice little full house. That was fun. There's always
there's always
people you can't see too. The counter is going crazy some weeks. Pretty busy. It's a lot of traffic. I appreciate everybody who comes back and listens in the archive like this to us jabbering away about movies.
I'm still on the shelf. I hope to finally get back to broadcasting next Saturday. So this might be the last time I'm on here for a while, but it's been a lot of fun to drop by and talk about these things.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun having you here. I'm sure you miss doing your show, and your viewers are missing you too. I would assume that you're pretty much recovered then.
I'm getting there. The pain is less now, but it's hard. Still having problems walking, still having problems breathing really deep, but it's getting there. It's getting better.
Breathing bothers you, stop.
Yeah, no. I really should,
No.
Ow. Laughing hurts.
Then you'll really be a horrible horror.
laughing hurts, which is problematic for me because I laugh a lot. There's a film called The Beginning of the End. I don't know. And there's a monster in it.
Oh,
looks
that's
like a cricket.
Yeah, there's giant grasshoppers in that one.
Oh, yeah. Peter Graves and all kinds. Yeah, okay.
Peter Graves was in a few good films. I liked him in Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Peter Graves was in... I'm going to have to go back and watch that one. The Devil Girl from Mars. That was weird. They had a robot in that, too. But the lady was kind of iconic as well. There were a lot.
Yeah,
I've shown that before, the viewers went crazy. They had a lot to say about that film. I don't remember if it was good or bad, but wow. I just typed in on the old image search engine 1950s monster movie posters, and it's showing me all these films I need to go see. or review.
Yeah, Peter Graves was in It Conquered the World.
It Conquered the World.
Yeah, that's a Roger Corman.
Okay.
Remember that one?
I remember. I'm thinking, I've got it confused with another one where, there's an alien that comes in and it buries itself in a cave and controls people to try to
put it.
That's
the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the one.
Peter Graves is in
it. And then he was in this great movie, Red Planet Mars.
Red Planet Mars. Okay. I'm going to have it.
Very
young. Did you ever see that one I was telling you about, the vampire killers? What were they?
I haven't seen it yet.
Sharon Tate and her husband. Yeah, check that out. I think you'll enjoy that. Very much. It's just a very unusual film, but a good film. But yeah.
Fearless Vampire Killers.
Yeah, there it is. I've seen, and it's just, wow, I just love it. It's like Mel Brooks wrote it. There's parts in it where they speed up the film, so it looks kind of like Benny Hill or something in a way. It's not intended to be that way, but it is, and there's no laugh track, but you just sit there and go, this is the weirdest film I've ever seen. Very enjoyable.
I misspoke earlier. Actually, in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that was Kevin McCarty, not Peter Graves.
Okay. Yeah, because I...
Kevin McCarty.
Invasion of the, yeah, that was...
and a very young Carolyn Jones.
Oh, okay. She was also in... Yeah, there was some other films she was in, too. She was in the Wax Museum, I think.
Yep.
Carolyn, yeah, because they put her up as Joan of Arc or something. And... The Wax Museum movie, which was a madman who got burned in a fire in a wax museum, and he came back and he started killing people, and then coating
House
them.
House of Wax, I believe you're
House
talking
of Wax.
About.
Okay, what did I say? House of Wax? No, I said, I don't know what I said. The Wax Museum. Yeah, that was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the House of Wax with
the House of Wax. Carolyn Jones was in it. They propped her up and made her. Joan of Arc, and someone walked up and said, "Hey, that sure looks like Carolyn Jones," and other people were like, "It sure does," and then it got funny, you know, and then hilarity ensued. Yeah, that's crazy stuff. Wow.
She was in the 7-year itch.
I'm sorry, what?
Carolyn Jones was in The 7-Year Itch, several episodes of Dragnet. She was in Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Man, she's been all over the place.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she was probably on a Love Boat, too, right? Fantasy Island a few times. I don't know. I don't know if she lived to be that. She was around in the 60s.
She was on Love American Style.
Love American Style. She was on Batman. Love American Style. That's she was on Call Shack. All right, so maybe Fantasy Island and the Love Boat. She could have been on those. I don't know.
He was Queen
with Robbie the Robot, right?
Wonder Woman.
She was in Wonder Woman. There you go. There you go. Everything should be 7 degrees of Robbie the Robot.
She was on Fantasy Island. How about that?
There you go. I was just joking around, but. Did you ever see the 1970 movie called Piranha?
Yes, I did. Long time ago.
See, there were so many things. That was another iconic thing, is put things in our water and make us afraid to go swimming. Because I was a kid, I loved swimming. And then all of a sudden, you start hearing stuff. And I think I heard about piranha before I heard about sharks, curiously.
Yes. there were a lot of jungle movies that had the piranhas and and whatever, and I think, you know, unless you're from Florida where there's lots of gators around, you don't think of things like that, or if you don't live near the ocean, you really don't think much about sharks. But piranha can be in small bodies of water; they can be anywhere.
There was something I saw not that long ago that was kind of funny that said, as I grew up, I always thought I'd have more trouble with quicksand. And the reason for that statement is because in TV and movie, constantly people were falling into quicksand and drowning, which is not really what happens. But that was, you know, they'd fall into a pit of oatmeal and go down, and that would be the end of it. You know, maybe you'd see their hat or something, you know, if that was, yeah. if they were wearing one.
But, God, there were so many deaths in quicksand. It's funny.
I thought I'd have more problems with quicksand. Yeah, really. Which could be an iconic monster, sort of, you know, quicksand in and of itself, you know.
Well,
the ooze that will get you.
Plot device.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, there are so many.
Sure. Yeah.
So many films.
It's just funny how you, and when you see a photo of the monster, you know exactly what film it goes to, you know?
Oh, right. For me, I'm digging at the titles. I Married a Monster from Outer Space. That's a really weird monster.
I'm glad you brought that up too. That was a very unusual looking alien, and they had a great effect when the smoke would come and make, you know, the men disappear, the ones that they were first turning into the monsters.
Yeah, that is just that's some crazy
kind of melted looking thing. Sort of.
Right.
Sort of a squid-looking thing.
Yeah, so much fun. So much fun.
But they were definitely unique to themselves. The Terror from Beyond Space, that monster was really aggressive-looking. The monster from Frankenstein Meets the Space Monster, that hairy thing, that was cool, too. Well, Gar, they're going to cut us off here, I think. So I am
any second
take off.
Now, huh?
Yeah. So I'm going to cut it short. Best of luck returning
yeah.
to your show. And
best
tell
of
folks
happy
real quick
holidays
before we
and
go.
All that?
Tell them where they can see your show.
Oh, you can. Best way is to look up Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Facebook. It's a group, and from there you can get more information. Other than that, Gar the Ghoul on Facebook.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Eerie House Radio. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.